The Talking Point with Cathy Motlatlana, weekdays 9 a.m. till midday.
All right, so let's get into our conversation for this hour. We'll kick it off with Dr. Bunmi Oyinsan, Nigerian author and novelist, who talks about the importance of history, but also the importance of knowing one's history. And then I'll introduce our guests for this hour.
You might wonder, why am I spending so much time on history? Well, a saying which has been ascribed to Marcus Garvey puts it very well for me. It says, a people without the knowledge of their past history, origin, and culture are like a tree without roots. I'll say that again. A people without the knowledge of their past history, origin, and culture are like a tree without roots. Garvey had his shortcomings, but this statement is profound. Think about it. A tree without roots is dead. If it's standing, it's simply being propped up by sand, the earth around it. It will not even take a particularly strong wind to bring it crashing down. I really love history.
And that is Dr. Oyinsan this morning. Professor Chita Twala is a history professor in the Department of Cultural and Political Studies at the University of Limpopo. Professor Twala, good morning.
Good morning, Mekedi, and good morning to all the listeners.
Professor Musa Qulu is a Zulu cultural expert and a founder of Idonsa Yesizwe. Professor Qulu, good morning.
Good morning, KZ, and good morning to your listeners. I'm outside court here in Durban, so if you hear extra noises, you will understand. Unfortunately, I cannot be in a quieter place.
All right. Professor Qulu, we'll see if we can continue without issue. And Omar Badshah is the CEO of South African History Online. Omar, good morning.
Good morning to you and to your listeners and to our fellow guest.
Well, part of what has prompted the series that we're having in the month of April is reflections on 30 years of our country's democracy. What are the wins? What are the losses? But what does the future look like? And what has become clear since we began this conversation is that it's quite difficult to actually look forward or even fully appreciate where we are today as a society without looking back. But this idea of looking back, Professor Twala, seems to stir up mixed emotions in people. Some believe that by looking back, we're only holding ourselves hostage to the past.
It depends on where one stands looking at history. And I guess the majority of the people who does not want to hear more about the past are the ones who are exactly in the know-how of what happened in the past, and they don't want that knowledge to be in the public domain. And history, by its nature, it is an emotive subject, and you can't divorce it from the emotions of the people. And in moving forward, how do you move forward without knowing your past? And I want to believe that the past is the one to set us free, because the truth will come by in when we are investigating the past. I don't want to believe and embrace the narrative that we should move forward without looking at the past. The doctor from Nigeria indicated a profound statement there. But I also want to qualify that and say it is just like a car without an engine. You can't call it a car, even if it is brand new. Therefore, people who are without their history, they are just like a car without an engine, because they can't refer to the past. It happened as early as 1990. After the unbanning, whereby most of our schools and universities took a dip in terms of history students. But we knew why was that the case. It is because the history of liberation and the history of the black people was coming to the fore, and other people did not want our learners or our students to know more about that kind of history. In the past 30 years, we have made some strides in order to rewrite this history and also to put the history in the correct framework of being Afrocentric. And that is important for us as historians in moving forward.
Why do you think that it is such an issue of contestation talking about one's history? I mean, it shouldn't be an issue, but it does seem to be an issue.
Yes, Kathy, it is an issue because, as I alluded, some people do not want, even today, to hear about the atrocities of the past that were made against black people in South Africa. And the history that was in the public domain, it was the history of the Great Trek and whatever, which is a good history if you want to know more history. But we need also at the same time to juxtapose that history and to inquire that history with another kind of history, which is a barely written, and that is the history that we wanted to put in the public domain. For an example, how do you justify in 30 years of democracy that we still have the Fort Ridgeway movement and then we have the Freedom Park almost facing each other? Therefore, that is important in terms of museums, but at the same time, it is a divide kind of an approach. But we are embracing it that at long last, there is Freedom Park, which is also telling more about the history of the black people. In no way that in South Africa, whereby black people are in the majority, but their history is unknown. In no way that in South Africa, whereby black people are leading in terms of making history, but we don't know about their history. And then you get our youngsters today saying, but why should we bother about history? And why should we bother about the future? Because the future is futuristic, and we don't know whether it is coming or not. But the past is the past, and we know that it happened. And that is what we are interested in. You can study whatever discipline or study that you are concentrating on, whether it is mathematics or physical science, but there is an element of history in everything that you are studying. If you look at Pythagoras, people are just theorizing about Pythagoras and telling us about the theorems of Pythagoras, but they are not telling us that Pythagoras once visited and studied in Egypt. And then we are not told about the people who were his teachers in Egypt. Therefore, that is a one-sided kind of history and one-sided narrative of history. And we want to change that narrative in moving forward as South Africans.
All right, thanks for that. Professor Tulu, let me bring you in here. The importance, I think, specifically for a country like South Africa, to be able to talk about its history freely and openly so, without being seen as sparking seeds of division in that conversation?
Well, I heard Professor Twala talk about Freedom Park and the Fort Trekker Monument. The approach of the government of the ANC after 1994 was that the new dispensation is not going to get rid of the history of the Afrikaners and colonialism and apartheid, but it must remain in the memories of people what happened. Meanwhile, we introduce new ways looking at history from the side of the oppressed and from the time that came and is inclusive of everyone. As you know, South Africa is a non-racial, non-sexist, democratic country. So it became important that the past gets told in that manner. But I must also point out, Casey, that the past forms the foundation for the current and the future in every nation in the world. And the nations that are developed the most, China, your USA, your European Union countries, they stick to their history and they make sure that they record each and every achievement that has happened in their history in the past. so that the people of today can learn from the past. If you don't have a past to learn from, your today will be very weak.
So what does that mean for us, Professor Gulu?
It simply means that we have to embrace our history as it is and accept that there were very unfortunate instances of colonialism and apartheid. And that it has been addressed as a result of the triumph of 1994, which has created an inclusive society. But if we simply now say maybe South Africa started in 1994, or maybe South Africa started on the 22nd of April 2024, we will be missing a point and we will be weakening our country, our people, and our democracy. And we will not be able, for example, you hear President Ramaphosa being capable of South Africa being the largest economy now on the continent. Those things are based on past activities, and you build from there. But I think the whole thing that you should be ashamed, Afrikaners should not be ashamed of what they did. At that time, it looked very good, and you must remember our history in high school was all about the Jan Ribbeck, it was all about glorification of the Afrikaners and their history. It has changed now, but it doesn't mean that that part of theirs should be buried.
Omar, let me bring you in here, because in as far as history goes, you are dealing quite extensively, I think, with both the good and the bad in as far as it relates to South Africa's history.
Yes, you know, we've been faced with, after 1994, with the task of building a new nation. And building a new nation means re-examining every aspect of our lives and to make sure that whatever that is wrong in our society, whatever that is undemocratic, oppressive, needs to be changed. We need to build a new society. In 1990, with the unbanning of the ANC, we entered a new era, and we are fortunate, incredibly fortunate, that our new era was heralded in by the likes of people like Mandela, Sisulu, the leaders of all the various liberation movements. All of them had to grapple with what is existing and how to change it. But essentially, we didn't actually pay much attention right at the beginning to the issue of history. And incorporating a new history into our educational system, we have new textbooks, a lot of new research, and history is part and parcel of a compulsory part of our educational system at high school and primary school level. We cannot, we said right at the beginning, we cannot rebuild South Africa unless we understand what existed, what is wrong with the existing order, and what is the alternative. And so that debate is part and parcel of how we measure history, we measure our progress. And ask ourselves, racism, have we done away with it? Is it no more existing? And how did we achieve a sense of a more inclusive history? Or have we achieved a more inclusive history? So history is very, very important. It drove our understanding of history, drove our liberation struggle, because we said that we were not wanting, liberation for freedom from one group to another. We wanted freedom that encompassed everyone that contributed to the building of South Africa. So let me put it this way. History is central to our notion of who we are and where we are going.
So when we look at South Africa today, 30 years post-democracy, what are the conversations around our history that you believe should be part of this moment?
Well, firstly, we need to understand how we have arrived at some of the concepts that we incorporated into our constitution. Who were the people who drew up? Who were the people who fought for freedom? And how do we monumentalize that? How do we remember that? So it's a constant look at our past. It's not something that we say, it starts here and ends here. Every period is constantly being evaluated and new information comes that helps us go forward. And also informs our policies. For instance, the war against the Palestinian people in the Middle East is something that is dear to us. We've always stood by, supported the struggle of the Palestinian people, and the Palestinian people supported our struggle. I remember one of my colleagues, Phyllis Naidoo, talking to me about being in a hospital after her injuries from a bomb blast in Lesotho. That in the hospital that she was in Eastern Europe, there were people from all over the world, people from Palestine, people from other countries who were struggling for their freedom. And there was a bond between people, and there was an understanding of each other's struggle. This is history, and the teaching of history and the writing of history is quite an important component of our evolving democracy.
All right.
And it's what's very important is the notion of inclusivity, of allowing people to do new research and for them to put forward their ideas about the past.
All right.
Without fear and create an atmosphere of scholarship.
We're going to have to pause it there. It's time for me to take the latest news headlines. It's 10:30. All right, we continue the conversation on the talking point. We're looking at history and the revision of history. Does it heal, or does it heal wounds, or does it reopen some of these wounds? Is a question we're asking. Professor Chida Twala is a history professor in the Department of Cultural and Political Studies at the University of Limpopo. And Professor Musa Tulu is a Zulu cultural expert and founder of Indonsa Yesizwe. So, Professor Twala, I think everybody has spoken, you know, quite extensively around the role and the importance of history then. What are the ways in which you believe we could be having this conversation about our country's history in a way that perhaps helps us to reflect very honestly about where we are, but what we would still need to do just to be able to actually continue to build South Africa to become the better nation and country that we know it can be?
Thank you very much, Kathy. I think one important thing that we need to do as a country is to start documenting our stories, what we call history from below. There are a lot of stories within people which are of historical significance, but which are not in the public domain. I think that is a point of departure. Number two, the whole question of highlighting the voices of the voiceless in the main domain of historical consciousness. That is important, particularly when we look at the voices of women in history making and the activities of women in history making. I think as a country, we are still lacking in that regard. Thirdly, Kathy, as a country, we are short-circuiting ourselves because we mainly concentrate on history as long as it is political history. And that is the danger, that we are closing an eye on looking at other histories, like, for example, social history, for example, looking at the cultural history, because all those kinds of histories, they build up to our historical consciousness and they build up to what we want to have as a country. Until such a time that we become conscious of our past, we are going to battle in moving forward. One president whom I won't call his name here, once said, if you read a history book and then you come across a chapter or you come across pages in that history book which are not palatable to your liking and to your ideology, you don't tear the pages away because you don't like what is written in that history book. But you read and then you make your assessment and then you interrogate what has been written in order to move forward. I think that was profound, that when you look at history, irrespective of whether it was written by the Afrikaners or by the British or by the colonized or by the colonizers, but as long as it is history, it is a foundation for us to move forward. And that is important for us. Fourthly, one thing that we also need to conjure our mind on, our minds on, it is the whole question of inclusivity in the writing of history, and avoid exaggerations when we are writing history, and avoid grandstanding when we are writing history, and avoid conscious misrepresentation of facts when we are writing history. If we can have that in our minds, then the future is too bright for South African history and for the South African populace. Thank you.
There's so much that you've said, Professor Twala, that I think, you know, we can unpack. I want to come to Professor Gulu. Just, I mean, part of what is highlighted here, at least for me, begins to explain why so many people in our country feel excluded even from the history of this country and feel that their stories have not been told, because, you know, there's been such a focus perhaps just on the political history, and even then, you know, not being fully inclusive, that it has led to the feelings of marginalization of others. How can we change that, Professor Gulu, in a way that is meaningful?
What I like about what Professor Twala just said now is the issue of cultural history and its importance in the formation of the South African identity. The unfortunate aspect of it is that the entirety of the apartheid regime was based on the politicization of culture, a weaponization of culture to describe people in terms of cultural superiority versus cultural inferiority, an anthropologization of society, so that you had to belong to some Bantustan, for example, based on your cultural background, or your access to opportunities would be based on your cultural background. And that is what I think damaged our cultural history a lot. Social history is the same, because spatial planning, as you know, Soweto is so far away from Johannesburg, and it's for black people. Here, Guamash is so far away from Durban city, it's because it's for black people. And that was based on cultural assessment of people, evaluation of people. And in fact, in Soweto, you know, even there's a vendor section, there's a section that is Zulu, AmaZulu section. Some of those 26 or 27 townships there were separated according to the cultural orientation of the people. But what do we do now? The problem that we're facing now is that we are generally not embracing this idea of a new united South Africa. And that's why we struggle a lot, and that's why we are struggling so much as a result.
All right. Thanks for that contribution. I'm going to start taking some of our callers that are on the line. Simpiwe, you're out in Khayelitsha. Good morning.
Greetings, Sister Katie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Simpiwe. I'm going to ask you just to speak a bit louder so I can hear you clearly.
Okay. How are you, Sister Katie?
Well.
Wow. Good. You're speaking to Simpiwe from Khayelitsha. On the topic of history, I just want to contribute a little bit. I think our history is being controlled somewhere, the narrative that we should learn about this history, not that history. I think our history is not told in its full capacity. Because if you can look right now, the only history that we are told is that of Father Nelson Mandela. Not to disrespect the man, but his history is well told. And if you can go to that corner, Nelson Mandela this. But if there is a memorial lecture of Nelson Mandela, someone from America, Barack Obama, somewhere there, will come and give the lecture, which is good. If there is a memorial lecture about Christian Siliani, we just take a peg in the market, we give a memorial lecture, of which we are not getting the full history about South Africa. Other people have known about Robben Island, when Nelson Mandela went there. But we know that he's not the first person to go there. Olonqawuse went there long before Nelson Mandela was born. If you look about, I think that the history of South Africa is being lost, man. And other history is not told. Just right now as we speak, we have a head of a king that is sitting in a museum in France. That history is not, we've not been told to young people. Mm. The only history that we have been given is that the history of the ANC and Nelson Mandela is that the history of South Africa revolves around politics.
Simpiwe, let me ask you this question. Whose job do you think it is to tell this history?
I think each and every person of us have that job to tell the history. But the history is being controlled by the government. If you can teach the history about Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe, tomorrow you'll be gone. You have to teach the history that is being nice to the ears of the government. I can ask a young person who has performed the ear transplant of the first person to perform an ear transplant in South Africa in Steve Biko Academic in Johannesburg. He would not know that Dr. Chifularo did that. Is a black person, a doctor, but the only history that we are being told is that of the ANC and that of Mandela. The true history of South Africa is not being told.
Mm. All right, Simpiwe, let's park it there. Professor Twala, whose job is it to tell history? And is it true? Is it true that in a democratic South Africa, if there are histories of individuals that are told, then something happens to them? Are we not beyond that? Does the Constitution not protect the rights of individuals to access whatever materials they may want, save for it being within the law?
Thank you very much, Kathy, and thank you to Simpiwe. I think we need, it is our job as South Africans to tell our history. Nobody will come from another country or another planet to come and document our history as South Africans. But Kathy, as a researcher myself, sometimes it pains me when you go to people and then you want them to tell their stories and people do not want to tell their stories. And because people don't want to come forth with their stories, then we sometimes end up having this kind of a problem in telling history. I don't think people will be victimized now in this democracy for telling the truth and for telling their stories. Number two, our main concern also is about the archival material. There is still this gatekeeping when you visit some of the archives and try to access some of the documents. And that is a problem because that will definitely screw our history from the direction that we want it to take. And number three, as Simbiwe talked about the selective nature of writing history. And we are trying by all means to correct that. And I wonder how many people would also know that Sobukwe was under house arrest on Robben Island. And how many people would understand why we had this Mandelization of the popular of the South Africans after 1994? We need to dig up and say, why is that the case in order to correct? Because we can't correct something that we don't know. And one other thing that we need to know as South Africans is to learn from other African countries how they fared in terms of freedom. Starting as early as 1957, in the Gold Coast, Kwame Nkrumah coming and having Ghana, and then how he managed to stabilize Ghana until he is exiting from government. And come and look at other people like Jomo Kenyatta, Azikiwe Mnandi, Sekou Touré, and those are African leaders with great aspirations of Pan-Africanism. And the Pan-Africanism that we need today in order to understand our kind of history. Because if we can't do that as South Africans, and we keep on mudslinging each other, and we keep on using history if we attack other people, and selectively quoting history when we attack other people, we are not going to win. We need to have these public debates, ongoing public debates, and debate the issues of our history. I am in Limpopo, and then we've got the history of Sekoukouni. But if you can ask even people in Polokwane here, who was Sekoukouni, we'll get just vague answers about Sekoukouni. And those are the things that we need to correct and start regional histories and come up with our provincial and national history. And then we can go and internationalize our history. Right. If you go to other countries, I was in Dar es Salaam 2 months ago, they know their history. They would want to ask you about South African history and not the history of Tanzania. Thank you.
Brian, you're in Cape Town. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Kathy.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I couldn't hear one of your previous speakers. I think he may have just preempted what I was going to say, but I didn't hear clearly. But I'll just say what I intended to say. Look, the problem, firstly, I'd say that the history, I'd like to say, just quote Trotsky again, history has no value if we cannot learn from it. Okay, that's just a basic statement. But the problem that I have with the history as portrayed by the capitalist media in this country is that it has criminally distorted the true events of the struggle prior to 1994. I mean,
In what ways, Brian?
It has portrayed the ANC as being the main liberators of the struggle of the oppressed people in this country. And it continues to do it, the SABC TV in the main. I mean, they've never ever highlighted or exposed the Condesa Concord, which tells of all the secret deals that were made behind the public. They've never actually told the public in this country what or made available transcripts of Nelson Mandela's speech to the U.S. Congress soon after his release from prison, in which he stated that the Constituent Assembly is not the aim of the ANC. In other words, a national convention is. So, in other words, he's saying that seizure of power from the apartheid regime is not the aim, but a negotiated settle with imperialism and with the de Klerk regime is what is on the cards. So the Condesa agreement has never been exposed. We are still paying apartheid debt up till today. So the other part of the criminality of the distortion of this this history is that they've never, there was South Africa prior to Condesa was divided into largely two main camps of struggle. One being the ANC, the National Democratic Struggle, which is the struggle against apartheid, and the other half being, or almost half, I would say, is having been the National Forum, which was a forum of about 200 affiliate formations, ZAPU being the largest of socialist organizations.
All right.
The other, I can name quite a few of them who are affiliates. So the Unity, well, the Unity Movement, but Abdusas, SACOS, and there were others who were not affiliated for their own reasons. But they were organizations like the Workers Organization for Socialist Action. There was Cape Action League.
All right.
There
All
was,
right,
I can go on and on and on. It's a very long list.
Okay. All right, Brian. Sorry to have cut you off there, but I think you've made the point. We'll get the prof to respond in a moment. Cyril, you're in Kokstad. Briefly for me, please, Cyril.
Yes, it will always brief when it comes to Cyril. Thank you for the opportunity, Kathy.
Yes.
I would like to pose these questions to the professors. We're talking about history. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that you don't start history in the middle. Now, I'm an African. I'm a Greek, huh? Pulling on an umbrella word, Khoisan, but I'm a descendant of the first indigenous people of South Africa. I'm also an African. So what I'm saying is this year, South Africa, I think if I'm correct, and the professors, whoever can help me out if I'm wrong, that South Africa was the last point of Africa that was just decolonized. Now let's get to the land issue. That's where you start your history. Now, the professor, if he can come honestly and say, this is what he has researched of the first indigenous people. Because all the people that we listen, and with great respect, I respect Robert Mazibuku and all other struggle heroes and so on. But the history, there's a history before them that needs to, come forward. Now, get to my point now. If we are to talk about a history, we are governed by the Constitution of South Africa. Now, the professors, I'm sure they are okay with this. In Section 25, when it comes to land restoration, the indigenous people, the first indigenous people, are marginalized in Section 25 because you can only claim land after 1913. Now, what constitution can we call that? Can we call that democracy? I want the professors to just answer that.
Okay.
Because we need solutions. Lamenting, me lamenting all the time without anybody doing any solutions.
Okay. All right, Cyril. Thank you for that. Professor Tkulu, I'll give you the first opportunity to respond.
Yeah.
All right, Professor Tkulu, not ready for us. Professor Twala, you can go for it.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I think Brian and Cyril, they are highlighting important questions for us as South Africans to ponder on, because that is important. Nobody on this platform said we are starting history in the middle, but we need to start from somewhere. But that does not necessarily mean that we are discarding the history of the Sen and the Khoi and the whole question of the land dispossession and also the fights due to land dispossession. That is part and parcel of our history. We are in this problem today, perhaps because of landlessness. And that is why we are saying all history is history. Land history is history. Labor history is history. Cultural history is history. But what we need to do, where do we start and how do we move forward? In terms of the constitution, unfortunately, I'm not a constitutional lawyer who would unpack and understand the meaning of that. But the land question is a priority for us as South Africans because some people lost their lives because of the land. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Professor Twala. Professor Qulu, I'll give you a moment just to give us your parting shot.
Well, thank you very much, Kathy. Again, I'm sorry, because as I said, I'm outside court here, so there could be some distractions. But I think all in all, fellow South Africans have a responsibility, and I think at the level of education, to emphasize on the new South African nationhood, which is constructed through the 1996 constitution, as well as you know, the style of government and, of course, an integrated society. I find that sometimes some of our problems are based on resistance to move forward while embracing the past and understanding it, and, of course, articulating it in such a way that we know what it means and we have moved away from those kinds of behavior towards each other and we're creating a new country. It takes a lot of time to create a country. If you look at America, the 1700s, they're still battling about aspects of their history even today. But it needs everyone, especially in the education system, to be involved in educating our children about where we come from and about where we are now and about what is our vision, common vision for the future.
All right. Professor Qulu, thanks for that contribution. Let me thank all of our guests in this hour. It is 11 o'clock and time for your latest news update.